I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, crossing now to Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks again for joining us, keeping us updated here of course, what's going on over there. Let's start off with this worrying trend. A new report on the hate crimes against Asian Americans. We've, of course, read in the news about a few that have happened this year and last year. It's found that 2021 has that troubling trend of 2020 in some major cities, and across counties and cities. There was a 164% increase in anti-Asian hate crime reports to police in the first quarter of this year compared to the same time period last year.
Yeah, and this is an unprecedented set of numbers that has been generated here. In the first quarter of 2021, not only was there no diminution in terms of the level of hate crimes against Asian Americans that the country is witnessing, but in fact, a 164% increase compared to the first quarter of 2020. Now, we knew the number was going to be substantially higher because, of course, it was only during the first quarter of 2020, as the pandemic really started to hit, that some of the language that was being used, particularly by former President Donald Trump, but also by others targeting Chinese Americans, particularly, you know, the constant references to the China virus, to Kung Flu at Trump rallies all over the country. Those were only just getting going in sort of late February, early March of last year, because the pandemic had only sort of hit American shores and was only being taken seriously in the latter stages of January. So to see these numbers and to see this still happening in 2021 indicates that the United States has got an ongoing problem. I mean, all the data and all the research suggests that this is primarily tied to coronavirus, to the responsibility that some Americans attach not just to China for allowing the virus to escape Chinese shores and, as President Trump used to couch it, destroy America's economy. I mean, he on numerous occasions, as we reported at the time, indicated that he thought it was a deliberate strategy by the Chinese government to obliterate all the economic progress that his government had notched up. But in the case of some Americans, they are taking this out against Asian Americans with ongoing acts of violence. Now, there are efforts on Capitol Hill to do something about this. The Senate has already passed a bill that is now gone back to the House of Representatives that would create a special position within the Department of Justice specifically to lead the battle against these racist attacks that are being particularly exhibited in places like New York and Los Angeles. Those, of course, the two most populous cities in the country, so you would expect them to be witnessing substantial levels of animosity sensitivity towards the enormous Asian American communities that live in both of those cities. But there are also efforts underway at a local level. So the police commissioner in New York City last week said that he's now planning to deploy teams of undercover officers who are themselves Asian American in a bid not just to head off acts of violence, but to understand what degree of planning is going into some of these attacks. And so there are efforts underway in individual police forces, of course, to do something about this. San Francisco, another city that saw a massive increase in attacks, a 140% increase in San Francisco itself. In New York, the number was 223% higher in the first quarter of 2020 versus the first in the first quarter of 2021 versus the previous year. There were 42 attacks against Asian Americans in New York City in the first 3 months of this year versus only 13. I say only, I mean as many as 13 back in the first quarter of 2020. So evidently a major issue that the United States needs to confront. These incidents, I think it's fair to say, are now getting more public attention than they were when things first started to exhibit themselves last year. So whenever these crimes are captured on camera, for example, we see them widely reported on American television, on social media, and you see a reaction from the Asian American community and from the and from others, just appalled at these incidents. But I think pressure now growing on lawmakers to do more than they've already done. And the Biden administration has also voiced the need. President Biden's referred to this on multiple occasions during his first 100 days in office, urging Americans who are committing these acts of hate to stop doing it and warning of legal repercussions and a crackdown against those who continue to do so.
Yeah, terrible statistics. Simon, let's talk about Afghanistan. I know we've touched on it before, but US and NATO starting to formally withdraw troops now from Afghanistan after a presence of almost 20 years. Taliban now warning that they are no longer bound by an agreement not to target international troops.
Yeah, so the withdrawal has actually now officially begun. It's finally underway. 20 years after American troops were first deployed to Afghanistan in the aftermath of the attacks on America on September the 11th, 2001, the attack, of course, that destroyed the World Trade Center orchestrated by Al-Qaeda and the attack on the Pentagon here in Washington, D.C. President Biden, as you know, says he wants all American troops gone from Afghanistan by September the 11th this year. The Taliban say, well, hang on a second, the previous administration agreed that all troops were going to be withdrawn by May. That deadline has come and gone, and you, the United States, have broken your agreement to pull these troops out. The Americans now, and one commander particularly over the last few hours, has warned the Taliban and other forces in Afghanistan that even though American troops are in a withdrawal position now, and they are beginning to move their men, women, and materiel off the battlefield, that those troops will reserve the right to respond forcefully to any attacks that are launched against them. You know, you might think, well, the Taliban would just allow these forces to leave Afghanistan hasten the day when a new political dispensation might see the Taliban return to power in Afghanistan. But they are making it known that they are very angry with the United States for having delayed this withdrawal, even though the withdrawal is still taking place. There are some foreign policy analysts here who think that that may be posturing on the part of the Taliban, a defiant position as these U.S. troops begin to withdraw, and others who worry that there is a real risk of an attack on U.S. forces as they are making their retreat. Of course, in a broader sense, anxiety about what comes next in Afghanistan, particularly with prominent women's rights figures in the country, saying that they've heard no conversations taking place between them and the United States, or the United States and the Afghan government, or any conversations that are underway with the Taliban over the future, particularly of women's rights in the country, the rights of girls, for example, to continue attending school. Remember that when the Taliban used to run things in Afghanistan, they outlawed school for young girls. So there are grave concerns about where all of this is heading, but the United States is definitely heading for the exits. The Biden administration argues that humanitarian assistance to Afghanistan can be tied to benchmarks that any new Afghan government will be required to meet. But on the ground, there is no question that there is uncertainty and anxiety, particularly among the female population in the country.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, speaking to Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, let's now go to the border wall construction projects. Pentagon has announced that it will cancel all those paid for with the Department of Defense funds that the previous administration redirected from military schools, training facilities and other projects.
Yeah, absolutely. So remember that when Donald Trump was president, he initially, when he was campaigning for the presidency, said he was going to build a wall along the southern border between the United States and Mexico and get the government of Mexico to pay for it. Well, that was obviously, as we all knew at the time, a complete non-starter. So then he went to Congress to try and get Congress to pay for his border wall. And in very large measure, Congress would not do that because at the time of the power that Democrats had up on Capitol Hill and in the House of Representatives, of course, still have. So Donald Trump at that point wanting to pay for the construction of at least some sections of border wall diverted money away from other projects within the Department of Defense, money that was going to be spent on training facilities, military schools and a host of other military projects. And he diverted that money into the construction of border wall, around $3.5 billion in military construction funds were sent specifically to the construction of the border wall at the order of President Trump and the then U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper. Well, all of that is now being reversed under President Joe Biden and the current Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, not least because the Biden administration has no interest whatsoever in continuing to expand the border wall in any meaningful sense. And we also learned just earlier this week that one section of new wall that was constructed under Donald Trump's aegis in the White House, there's now a serious case of soil erosion beneath it. So in fact, the Army Corps of Engineers is now being deployed to try and shore up that section of new fence. And there are investigations underway as to precisely what kind of construction company was brought in the first place to build that new bit of wall, because it doesn't appear to have been built with literally the sort of the shifting sands beneath it having been sufficiently taken into account. But this is absolutely a Democrat president in the White House saying, I'm not building any more wall. And Republicans, of course, responding and saying, well, hang on a second, why not? Because you've got a major crisis developing, a humanitarian crisis that continues to develop along America's southern border. And there's no question whatsoever that this issue, the border wall parenthetically, but immigration and the border crisis more broadly, are going to be issues that we'll talk about a lot more between now and November of 2022. When, of course, we've got midterm elections here, one third of the U.S. Senate and the entire House of Representatives up for grabs. And Republicans definitely believe that the issue of immigration is something on which they can make political capital, and that they can do so by saying to Joe Biden, well, why on earth aren't you building this wall to keep people out who are pouring into the country illegally?
Simon, let's switch gears to Houston now. An interesting story out of there. Police discovering possible human smuggling ring. More than 90 migrants packed into a two-story home.
An absolutely extraordinary story, and directly connected, of course, with that crisis on the southern border. Mm. 90 people in a single family home. It sounds as though the police in Houston received some kind of a tip-off as to the presence of what neighbors believed was a large number of people who may well have been trafficked into the United States. When the police got there, they found only 5 women among the 90 people. The youngest person in the house was in their early 20s. No children present. 5 people tested positive for COVID-19, and several others said that they had lost their sense of taste and their sense of smell, which of course is a key indication that they may themselves be suffering from COVID-19. And given the very close quarters in which people had been sheltering in that home, it's perfectly possible that other people within it had in fact contracted COVID-19 as a result of being kept in there. It's unclear how long they had been there. The owner of the home has come forward and said that she knew that there was something odd going on in the house. She didn't live in the home, but it was only when she returned to the property that she realized just the extent to which the house had been destroyed as a result of the large number of people who had been inside it. So police investigations are continuing. The home has now been boarded up, so no one else can get into it. But this is an indication of what happens. I mean, assuming, and it seems highly likely, that it is confirmed that this was a case of people smuggling, of human trafficking. It's very clear. Houston is a gateway city to the rest of the country for people who have come across the border from Mexico, whether it's into Laredo in Texas or any of the other crossings in Texas, the illegal crossings. And then they make their way to the nearest big city, which is Houston. From there, they hope to secure enough funding to fan out to other parts of Texas and other parts of the Southwest. And it may well be that this home or others like it have been used by people smugglers on a continuing basis as a kind of way station once people arrive and before they move on. So investigations underway, but quite extraordinary scenes that must have been taking place inside that house over at least the last few days.
And Simon, just finally, it's time to revisit the Rose Garden at the White House. Of course, we have spoken about this a few months ago, and Melania Trump, the former First Lady, gave it a bit of a makeover. Thousands of people now signed an online petition calling for the current First Lady, Jill Biden, to restore it.
Yeah, it's now passed the 50,000 signature mark, and the organizers of that petition say that they hope it receives 75,000 signatures. I think there's no question that this petition is partly politically motivated. It is evident that the people behind it are not supporters of Donald Trump and no fan of Melania Trump. They are urging the new First Lady of the United States, and Jill Biden, of course, and the second gentleman of the United States, Doug Hemhoff, who is married to Vice President Kamala Harris, to restore the Rose Garden to the original design that was put into place by Jackie Kennedy. According to the petition, in 2019, Melania Trump had cherry trees, a gift from Japan, removed, as well as the rest of the foliage, and replaced it with a boring tribute to herself. Jackie's legacy was ripped away. We want Jill Biden and Doug Emhoff to restore the Rose Garden to Jackie's original design. Now, you know, putting the politics to one side, there are some very prominent figures in this city who are appalled by the redesign that the former First Lady Melania Trump was engaged in overseeing, and they were appalled by it when the new design was first revealed. And prominent among them is the presidential historian Michael Beschloss. I mean, a bit like the Kennedys, he's kind of like modern day royalty here in Washington, D.C., and he's been very active on social media, to his credit, from the moment that the new design was unveiled, saying that he thought thought that it looked like a concrete jungle, and where on earth, and they weren't actually cherry trees, as the petition describes it, they're crab apple trees. But where had the crab apple trees that were gifts from Japan, where had they gone, and why had they been taken away? So I think this is going to be an issue, because, you know, once this petition continues to, if it does reach that 75,000 mark and maybe goes even higher for signatures, at a certain point, I think that Jill Biden will find herself having to respond to those requests. And, you know, it may well be that with prominent voices in Washington, D.C., more quietly suggesting to members of the Biden administration that perhaps it might be a good idea to undo some of the things that were done to the Rose Garden by the Trumps. It's going to be very interesting to see how they handle this.
Exactly. Well, Simon, thank you again for keeping us updated here in Singapore, and I really appreciate you speaking with me this morning.
Cheers, Justine. Talk next weekend.
Simon Marks, our U.S. Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C.
Thanks for listening to Simon Marks Reporting. And if you like what you heard, click the subscribe button and come back soon for more. And I'd love it if you'd give me a review. Those can be hugely helpful in spreading the word. Thanks a lot. More from me soon.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.